Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hello, superfans. It's me, Maximilian Clark.
And it's me, John Dorsey.
And this is our first SBR Compilations, where we take some of your favorite segments and squish them together.
We're going to be playing sequential for you now, back to back, so you can listen to the show all at once.
And join us after the show for a behind the scenes with sequential writer, John Dorsey.
Oh, wow. That's me.
And also me.
That's Max.
And so we hope you enjoy it, because these stories are being told in sequence.
In sequence.
In
sequence.
3, 2, 1. In sequence.
In sequence.
What did you wait?
This is a World Tellink prepaid call from
Sicko,
a patient at the Shady Acres Rehab Facility in...
From These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore, it's sequential. One tale, told bit by bit. I'm Candace Stripe. For the last year, I've spent every day trying to figure out where a supervillain was for 1 hour on Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020.
The supervillain Sicko has once again escaped from the Shady Acres Villain Rehab Center in Bloomington, Indiana.
In case you weren't familiar with his crimes, Sicko is best known as the archenemy of Goatman. He's the perfect foil for the dour ungulate, colorful, afraid of heights, and famous for his sick sense of humor. Hence, Sicko, a name given to him by the Chicago PD. His real name is unknown. Every attempt to identify him has ended in failure. This show is not about the origin of Sicko. This show is about his most infamous crime.
In other news, tragedy in Chicago today. The kid, beloved sidekick to Goatman, has been found dead.
The kid's real name is Philip Dodd. Known to be good-natured, calm under pressure, smelled nice at the end of a patrol. He was 19 at the time of his death. That fateful night in September, the 23rd, a Wednesday, the kid had tracked Sicko to an abandoned pharmaceutical plant on the outskirts of the city. The villain tends to be drawn to places with a medical theme. A police officer on patrol noted the kid's arrival in his duty journal, remarking it was strange to see the sidekick without his mentor. The officer in question was Commissioner Norman.
So, I'm out there, right? Eyes like an eagle. And I see the kid, without the Bosco, entering the building at 11:32 p.m. Moment later, whoosh! Ginormous fireball, explosion, rocks, all of Cicero, car alarms everywhere. I love this job! Tragic, though, about the kid.
Goatman swore vengeance, and within a week he caught Sicko and turned him over to the authorities. This is where our story begins, with a letter addressed to me from Sicko. His message was four simple words. I didn't do it. In another life, I was a television reporter in Chicago, working the superbeat. I'd covered several of Sicko's crimes and was kidnapped by him on more than one occasion. So we had what you would call a working relationship. I didn't do it. If there's one thing to know about Sicko, he's not shy about his crimes.
I once took out an ad to brag about killing a kitten in front of a puppy... in front of a children's birthday party!
We speak on the phone twice a week. I often hear other criminal masterminds playing in the background.
was I? Yeah, I just love killing. Men, women, children, infants, lovers, adulterers, incels, swerfs, turfs, smurfs, lawyers, doctors, butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, bookies, librarians, libertarians, Rastafarians, black, white, alien, extra-dimensional, two-dimensional. It doesn't matter to me. If it's got a pulse, I can fix that. At this point, if I chose not to kill someone, it would be prejudicial.
So, for the record, did you kill the kid?
I wish.
So who did? Sicko is not only unrepentant of his crimes, he is proud of them. He's already serving 98 consecutive life sentences for his other crimes. So why deny this one?
I have an image to uphold. Explosions are so quotidian. A pedestrian. If I were to blow someone up, I would do it like they were a balloon. You see, if you get an air compressor and then you stick that thing right in their mouth...
I'm going to cut in here and spare you the details. It's true. Every crime that can be traced back to Sicko has a unique spin on it. A brief list includes setting up an actual trolley car dilemma, removing the parachutes from a skydiving course for nuns, placing lactose into a soy-based ice cream vat, and of course, what is widely known as the noodle incident. Having covered his crimes for years, I can say this confidently. An explosion at a pharmaceutical plant just doesn't fit his M.O. And then there's this.
So what do you say to the rumors that you're about to take over the horns?
Ah, geez, I don't know about all that. Goatman is the best there is. I just want to make sure the horns wind up on the best head out there.
Then, 36 hours after that interview...
You gotta help me. Give me a new face, a new ID. Help me disappear!
Can you just roll it? Like, hamster ball.
This is a segment from the popular SPR show, The Utility Belt. The kid is calling in after crashing the Goatmobile. Listen to how the call breaks down.
I'm sure Goatman will understand. You're not the first sidekick that's taken a supercar for a joyride.
I wasn't taking a joyride. I was trying to escape.
Escape? From what?
Oh my god. He's here. Listen to me! Nobody knows this! I am not the first...
Kid, are you there?
What happened in those 36 hours to change the kid from the bright, confident heir to the horns to someone running for his life? Unfortunately, we may never know because that was the last the world heard from him. 2 days later, he was dead. We may never know what it was he was escaping, but a dark explanation looms. Listen to this part again.
Listen to me! Nobody knows this! I am not the first...
What?
I am not the first... I am not the first...
I'm not the first. In the past 20 years, there have only been 6 recorded deaths of teenage sidekicks. This is Quentin Crawford from the Boy and Girl Sidekicks of America.
Busy schedule, you know, and I might pay, you know,
can you tell me again what you just said, for the record?
Oh, yes, but I must clarify that this is already a matter of public record, if not widely publicized. But of the 6 deaths, 3 of them were apprenticed to Goatman.
Sequential is produced by Haley Frond and me, Candace Stripe. Ethan Schwartz is our editorial advisor. Sequential is a production of These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore. We'll be back next week with our next episode, Bad Man.
Previously on Sequential.
This show is not about the origin of Sicko. This show is about his most infamous crime.
Tragedy in Chicago today. The kid, beloved sidekick to Goatman, has been found dead.
So, for the record, did you kill the kid?
I wish.
So who did?
But of the 6 deaths, 3 of them were apprenticed to Goatman.
This is a World Telling prepaid call from
Sicko,
a patient at the Shady Acres Rehab Facility in...
From These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore, it's Sequential. One tale told bit by bit. I'm Candace Stripe. We're at episode 2. You probably heard the first episode on These American Supers or at our website, sprpod.com, but if you haven't, stop and go back to our last episode. We're telling this story in sequence. The story is about Philip Dodd, a.k.a. The Kid, Goatman's teenage sidekick who was allegedly killed by their main adversary, Sicko. Last episode, we presented the key pieces of evidence for and against Sicko. By the end, we had begun to consider evidence of another possible suspect.
Three of them were apprenticed to Goatman.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Did Candace Stripe just accuse Goatman of murder? No, not accuse, no. But Sicko has definitely been implying it during our phone calls.
All I'm saying is it's weird, right? Having a sidekick, it's like having a goldfish. Your most basic job is to keep them alive. Not that I care, but, well, geez, Goatman? When he gets bored, he just sends them down the toilet. Before Phil, R.I.P., there was Jerry. And before Jerry, oh, there was this sweet girl. And besides her, oh, maybe a half dozen others who had the sense to run off before they could get flushed. And of course, there's his first ward, Tricky Ricky.
It's Patrick, actually.
Patrick Mason, the original kid. He's well into his 40s now, but for a time, he was the face of sidekicking in America.
My father encouraged my sidekicking career, and found every opportunity to profit from it.
Patrick was adopted from the boys' home for abandoned acrobats by Goatman when he was 13 years old.
While other kids were bumming around the mall or going to arcades, I was learning kung fu in the mornings and blood splatter analysis at night. The only other kids that I got to hang out with were the other juvenile giants. And even then, it wasn't like they were normal. Father kept telling me that all this was so I could replace him one day. That Chicago would always need a goat man.
So at age 18, Patrick expected to inherit the title of goat man, but instead, he was fired by his own adopted father.
He never intended to give up the horns. I don't think he can bear the thought of anyone else wearing them. Did you know he doesn't even have a will?
After your time with Goatman, he's had a string of young wards, all dead now. Is this just cosmic coincidence, or could it be something more?
My father is a malignant presence on the superheroic community. He promises a chance at the horns, and everyone just gives him what he wants, but it's never enough. That's the thing about goats. They eat everything.
I don't know if he killed those kids, but I wouldn't put it past him.
My son said that, huh? That I'm a bad man.
This is Ol' Horny himself. Goatman, who agreed to a rare sit-down interview.
These sidekicks, they don't know how lucky they are. I had to do everything myself. These kids, hell, they don't even have their own baddies. They inherit ours. My contemporaries trot out boy wonders for the cameras and then throw them back in the hideout when the fighting starts. I train soldiers, not mascots.
So you're saying all the deaths were accidental?
I am saying that when you walk the cliff's edge, sometimes you fall. I gave them everything. Millions in training, billions in equipment, my priceless time and attention. Philip was hot-headed. You heard the audio. He stole my car. I did my best with him.
A week before, he was getting ready to put on the horns. What happened?
No, come on. They all run once or twice. Teenage hormones.
It seems like a lot of them tried to run pretty soon before their deaths.
What are you getting at here, Candace? Do you want to say something to me?
All of your sidekicks...
Children.
...died, just as they were rumored to take over as Goatman.
Are you accusing me of murder, young lady?
I am just saying that it's suspicious.
It was bad luck.
Sicko says that there's a lot more to
this. You are taking the word of a convicted murderer over a lifetime of service.
Would you like to deny it? For the record, did you kill Philip Dodd?
No. I did not kill my son. But tell me, if he is dead, where's his body?
I'm sorry.
If Philip is really dead, show me his body.
Sequential is produced by Haley Frond and me, Candace Stripe. Ethan Schwartz is our editorial advisor. Sequential is a production of These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore. We'll be back next week with our next episode, The Body.
Previously on Sequential.
Did Candace Stripe just accuse Goatman of murder?
Goatman? When he gets bored, he just sends him down the toilet.
I don't know if he killed those kids, but I wouldn't put it past him.
My son said that, huh? That I'm a bad man?
I am just saying that it's suspicious.
It was bad luck.
For the record, did you kill Philip Dodd?
Sicko.
A patient at the Shady Acres Rehab Facility in...
From These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore, it's Sequential. One tale told bit by bit. I'm Candace Stripe. We're at episode 3. You probably heard the previous episodes at our website, sprpod.com, but if you haven't, stop and go back. We're telling this story in sequence. The story is of Philip Dodd, a.k.a. the Kid, Goatman's teen sidekick who was allegedly killed by the supervillain Sicko, Goatman's archenemy. In our last episode, we wondered if Goatman himself was involved. Then, when we spoke with Goatman, he made a startling accusation himself.
If Philip is really dead, show me his body.
The Kid's funeral was closed casket. If his body is missing, there would be only one way to find out now.
Ignition.
And it's not easy.
10.
Normally,
9,
a trip to Valhalla Deep Space
8,
Memorial would eat up about 3
7,
years of funding for Sequential.
6,
Spandexo CEO
5,
and fan of the show, Jake
4,
Bindle, helped foot the bill.
3,
thanks, Jake!
2, 1, liftoff!
Spandexo Grant, Spandex presents Overarmor, a dynamic, fully symbiotic costume that lives next to your skin.
Available at Target.
It takes about 3 hours to reach Valhalla from launch, depending on where it is in Earth's orbit. The asteroid was appropriated by the Department of Superhuman Services so that the remains of dead superheroes could be isolated from those seeking to revive or clone them. The Hooded Lantern, Croesus, and more recently Quantum, the Ultimate Speedster, have made this asteroid their final resting place. I pass his placard on the way to Valhalla Jr., the section reserved for sidekicks. It has been nicknamed the Kiddie Pool since the vast majority of those buried there are, well, you get it.
Please stand back as we extract the casket. Let's pop her open.
Not yet. With Goatman's permission, we pull the casket from storage and open it for the first time since it was interred here. Okay, go ahead. Go. All that's inside is a singed domino mask and a pile of ropes. No body. Which means only one thing.
Old Horny pulled that on me a couple of times.
Sicko, unsurprisingly, had opinions on this latest development.
Well, I faked my own death. But it gets boring. Retirement, just isn't in the cards for us lifers. But Philip was different. I hope he got out, and I hope he stays out.
So, Where do you think Philip is now?
Ah, who knows? It's impossible to even begin to guess. I haven't the foggiest idea. But if it were me...
Please.
Well, if I had to run from the goat himself, there's only one person I'd trust. I bet he's gone to Whiteout.
There are plenty of services to help supers come up with an alter ego. But when a super wants to make their secret identity their only identity, there's a clear number one choice. Whiteout sells new identities, and he doesn't discriminate who they're for. He's wanted in 7 countries and ranks among the top criminals wanted by Interpol and the agents of Acronym. He's nearly impossible to catch due to his unique superpower. You can only find him once. Once you do, you can no longer make new memories of the man. Even cameras have a hard time holding on to his image. This has made it all but impossible for anyone to investigate him. If this introduction makes it into the program, it means Sicko's tip was correct and I was able to find Whiteout's secret shop. But I won't be able to remember it myself. According to my notes, it should be in a suburban strip mall.
Hello, young lady.
Hi, I'm looking for Whiteout.
Well, there's a Staples in the shopping center that should be able to sort you out.
No, I'm looking for the man who can help someone disappear.
Well, if there was someone who offered that service here, which they don't, I'm sure they wouldn't want to broadcast it to the world.
I'm sorry, let's start over. My name is Candace.
Stripe. And you are looking for Philip Dodd, no doubt. I own a radio, Miss Stripe.
If I can find him, I can prove the innocence of at least one man.
Sicko. Then what happens if I do know something and it really helps exonerate him? He's not really innocent, is he? Would I own his next crime?
No, I am only seeking the truth.
You might be overestimating my love of good journalism.
Come on. Sicko's been found guilty of thousands of other crimes. He's staying in rehab until he's cured. Goatman, on the other hand, if he did something to his wards, and I think he did, shouldn't the world know it? You do know something, don't you?
Philip never told me what happened that night back in Chicago. All he did was ask me for a way out, and that's what I gave him. I don't care if it was Sicko or Goatman, or if he faked the whole thing for kicks. The only thing I care about is that he's happier now.
So you did help him. He's alive. If he's running from Goatman, you have to know that it's only a matter of time before he's found. And if Goatman finds him first, there's nothing we can do for him. But if I find him, I can protect him. I can expose old Horny and get the Legion on Philip's side. If you wanted to save Philip's life, your job's not over yet.
I could just duck down behind this desk, and you'd be back to square one.
And you can keep on wondering whether you've really helped the kid.
Don't lose this.
Thank you. Wait, what? Where the hell am I? What's with all the Roombas? Hello?
Candace.
Where am I?
Candace, can't...
Haley, what's going on?
I'm gonna have you sit down.
Do we play it? Yes. Okay. So, there you have it. I did something to help me find Philip Dodd. But however I got it, I had an address for Philip Dodd somewhere in Middle America. Since we blew all our money going to space, I had to hitchhike my way there. The instructions brought me to the food court on the second floor.
Hi, welcome to Cinerole. How can I coat your smile in sugar today?
Oh my god. You're Philip Dodd.
Not anymore.
Sequential is produced by Haley Frond and me, Candace Stripe. Ethan Schwartz is our editorial advisor. Sequential is a production of These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore. We'll be back next week with our final episode, The Truth.
Hi, this is John Dorsey, co-executive producer of Superhuman Public Radio and the voice of Ethan Schwartz. I wanted to talk to you about a new sponsor of SPR. The series is called The White Vault, a horror audio drama set in a remote Arctic outpost and the records of the team sent to repair the station. Now, if you're fans of H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness, this show is for you. Now, this series is complete, so if you're looking for something with a definitive end, check them out today. Find them on your favorite podcasting app or at thewhitevault.com. Now, onto the show. Previously on Sequential.
If Philip is really dead, show me his body.
All that's inside is a singed domino mask and a pile of ropes.
No body. So, where do you think Philip is now?
Well, if I had to run from the goat himself, I bet he's gone to Whiteout.
You can only find him once.
I don't know if I'd call Sicko innocent.
Oh my God, your Philip Dodd.
Not anymore.
This is a World Tell Link prepaid call from
Sicko,
a patient at the Shady Acres Rehab Facility in...
From These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore, it's Sequential. One tale told bit by bit. I'm Candace Stripe. We're at our fourth and final episode. You probably heard the rest of the episodes on our website, sprpod.com, but if you haven't, stop and go back. We're telling this story in sequence. The story is of Philip Dodd, a.k.a. the Kid, Goatman's teen sidekick, who was allegedly killed by the supervillain Sicko, Goatman's nemesis. Last week, we caught up with Philip, who, as you've heard, is very much alive. I was hoping that this would be the moment that solved everything, the aha that would tell us who the true villain of this story really was.
I don't believe it. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. You go out and find the kid, bring him back from the dead, and that's what he tells you?
That's right.
Tell me again, from the top.
How did you find me?
We're picking up where we left off in our last episode. Philip is, of course, going by a new identity, which we will not disclose on this broadcast. He took his lunch break so we could speak in private.
It's weird, right? Like, this guy saved my life, and I can't picture his face. But I do have a feeling. Good feeling.
I have listened to my interview with, them 20 times, but I can't get it to stick in my mind at all. My producer says they wanted to know how you are.
You mean, talk to him here? Whiteout. Whiteout, I'm okay. I'm better now.
Great. So let's cut right to it.
You want to know why I faked my own death?
It's certainly on my mind.
Things were bad with Goatman for a long time. I wrote the Boy and Girl Sidekicks of America to get reassigned, but a week before I left, I found out he was seriously planning on letting me go.
That's not so bad.
Oh no, that's what we call it.
You see, we live on the side of a cliff.
You mean he was going to kill you?
Yeah, and I didn't want to believe it, but I could. So I had to get out of there. After my joyride didn't work, I reached out to the only person I thought could help.
Sicko.
Are you crazy? No, I called Ricky.
A.K.A. Patrick Mason, the original kid who had accused Goatman of the attempted murder of Philip in episode 2.
Ricky got out. He said he could help. Gave me a time and place.
The warehouse.
Exactly. Night of, I go out. I tell Edward. Our butler that I'm going after Sicko and head to the meetup spot.
What happened next?
I hear a ticking noise and...
Kaboom.
Everything around that is hazy. Eventually I wake up in the Midwest with a new ID, a hotel room that's been paid for a week, and a job application to Cinerol.
Whiteout then.
Who?
So you wake up here and just go with it?
You know the saying, don't look a gift horse in the mouth because that's how you find out it's two people in a horse costume?
Right.
So, if I did know more about the explosion besides what's on the news, I don't know now.
So did Patrick help you to find Whiteout? Or did he set you up to die? Or did Goatman? Or was it really Sicko?
Who knows? If it was Goatman, he'll get me eventually. If it was Sicko, I'm lucky he just wanted to blow me up. I once saw him kill a man with ricotta cheese. But honestly, Goatman and I have so many enemies, it could be anyone in the old rogues gallery. Toxic Holly, Mr. Refrigerator, Miss Mauser, Panic Crackle, Putty Mug, Mangoat, The Puffin, No Face, Almanac Man, RG Beast, Hang Glider Man, El Tracero del Demonio, Shush.
Hey, Brendan, lunch break's over. Come on.
Coming. Thank you, Gene. Quizball, Terror Raven. Point is, I just don't know.
You don't wonder at all who was trying to kill you.
Lady, I'm not a junior detective anymore. Just a Cineroller.
Wait. Who told you about Goatman wanting to kill you?
The only person I still trust. Good luck, Candace.
Motive. We've talked about a lot of things in this case, but one thing that has eluded us this entire time is the motive behind it. Who had the most to gain if Philip Dodd died?
I don't think it's about the death of Philip, because he didn't die.
This is Haley Frond. You may have heard her segments on These American Supers. She's the unseen half of this show. After I left Philip to his new life, we talked about the status of the case.
Okay, I think we can both agree that Sicko didn't bomb Philip Dodd. But does that mean that Goatman is off the hook? And what about Patrick Mason? Was this all to free Philip?
Yeah, but if all this was to just free Philip, who gains the most from everyone thinking he's dead?
Maybe we should ask who loses.
Well, Sicko, of course. He's locked up. Goatman doesn't look good. It has us talking about his list of dead wards.
He's lucky you found the kid. Otherwise, he could have been the one tagged for murder.
Could you imagine Goatman in jail?
Oh. I have a new theory.
Oh, me too. We had a new suspect, but there was only one person who could confirm it.
Attention! The Nathan Fillion sign is now open to all blue badge holders. Blue badge holders, the Nathan Fillion sign is now open!
Well, hey, all right, one photo per customer, all right? Hold on. Have your phones ready, people. Have them ready. Hover hands only.
All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Say kid on three. One, two, three.
Kid!
Thanks, Mr. Mason.
It's all right. You can call me Kid.
Oh, thanks, Kid.
There we go. High five.
Patrick Mason.
Candace. Good to see you.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
I found your brother.
Oh my god.
Mm.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, Kid, can I get this signed?
Yeah, sure. Wait. Actually, I'll be back. Larry, 5 minutes?
Hey, everyone! All
come
right,
this way.
5 minutes, everyone!
Yeah.
5 minutes!
Hey, yeah, let's go this way. Excuse guys, we just gotta
oh
get
some
Oh my
god, it's the original Kid.
Yeah, it's me. can you just... So, you found him. How is he?
Surprisingly good.
Alive? Did he say who did it?
I wanted to follow up with you about your dad.
Goatman. Of course. I'd heard rumors that he was trying to get rid of poor Philip.
In our last interview, you said that he didn't have a will.
You came here to talk to me about my father's will?
Did you know that in the United States, superheroic identities are effectively treated as property?
You came here to talk to me about superhero law.
If you want the identity to outlive you, you can pass it on. But you have to make specific arrangements in your will. Stipulate what you want done in the event of your retirement or death. Or incarceration.
Hey, hurry up! I have tickets to see Nathan Fillion!
Hey!
But without a will, the title falls to their next of kin. Goatman fired you, but you are still his son, which puts you first in the line of succession?
That's quite an accusation you're making.
An innocent man is in jail because of your actions, and another may have been on his way.
First of all, Sicko is the least innocent person I've ever met. And I think we're lucky someone finally got Dad to lock him up.
He's made great progress in rehab.
Oh, good for him. So a criminal's getting help. A sidekick got free. And once again, nothing happens to Goatman. So what did I even do?
You blew up a Spandexo medical plant.
I know the owner. He'll be fine.
You'd make a pretty good villain with that kind of rationalization.
Oh, you're one to speak. You've been sidekicking for a villain for a month now.
Kid, come on!
You never considered that all of this is just one of his sick gags?
No, he needs me. I know him better than that.
But you didn't tell him he found Philip, right? You didn't tell him where he was. Commissioner Norman?
I hate to do this, Kid, but you're under arrest for arson and conspiracy to defraud the Department of Superhuman Services. I've cuffed you. I know you can get out, but don't. All right? These are, like, official cuffs.
You can't do this to me.
Right, come on. Let's get going. Watch your head.
I'm a hero!
Nope, that's on me. My bad.
I'm the hero!
Don't let him get in your head, Candace. What we have is special. I will always appreciate that you proved I didn't kill Philip Dodd.
Thanks.
Besides, if anyone did it, it was you.
I'm sorry?
You can take that.
Haley, I'm in the middle of a session. What? What? When? Hold on. I'm pulling it up now.
Identified as missing sidekick Philip Dodd, otherwise known as the Kid. He was found dead after the sugar storage in his Cineroller franchise exploded.
What did you do?
I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Wait! I guess I did sugarcoat it! I used you. Oh, I was so bored. But then here you come bounding in, trying to prove I'm not the killer. Everyone else knows that I am. And then it hit me. An investigative journalist looking for a killer discovers that she was the killer all along. How sick is that?
You're never going to get away with this.
You're never going to get away with this. Who led me to Philip? Who gave me all the juicy details of the investigation? Huh? Sidekick? I think you'll get 20 to life. And you can't even disappear. You've already met Whiteout.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And here's the worst part. Goatman's just as guilty. More! He's cracked a half dozen of those eggs, and nothing happens to him. He's a hero. It's a rigged system run by self-aggrandizing monsters. I think you hate it just as much as me.
I have to do something. I know Sicko is a supervillain, but I can't deny he's right about everything. I think I've always known the system doesn't work. I think it needs changing. I think that's why I've been bringing in the explosives.
Whoa! It's door number three! Don't cover the story, be the story! Come with me. Your bags are already packed.
Okay, hey, you cannot be in here right now. For your own safety, we gotta get to a new lo- What are you doing with that mic stand?
Actually, it's a boo!
Oh, yeah. Oh, that looked like it hurt.
After you.
Now this is a story to follow. Where you parked?
This is Haley Frond. This final recording from Candace Stripe was found at Shady Acres Villain Rehab Facility. Candace, who is now going by the alter ego Candy Striper, is still at large and is considered armed and dangerous. Sequential was produced by me, Haley Frond, and has been presented by Candace Stripe. Ethan Schwartz was our editorial advisor. Sequential was a production of These American Supers and QSPZ Baltimore.
Everyone, we hope you enjoyed that compilation of sequentials. We're back with the creators, Jack and Max. Max Jack.
Also known as John.
Also known as Maximilian. What do you want from me? And with all these compilations, we wanted to give you more than just the same old. We wanted to give you a look into the making of. Ooh, bonus. We typically split up the writing on this show between the two of us, but Sequential was entirely John Nelson Dorsey the Fourth's undertaking. And I wanted to start off by just sort of talking about, like, what put the idea of doing a show like this within our show?
You know, doing a riff on Serial was something we had envisioned from episode one, season one. And we discussed a couple ways to do it, and I wasn't comfortable taking it on for season one, so we decided we'd save it for season two, and then season two steams up like a train, and I finally sat down and thought, okay, what is the story we're going to do?
I think there was also the concern when we're making season one that we weren't sure how episodic to make it, like, I think we definitely had narrative arcs, but we also had a lot of conversations about how we wanted people to just be able to encounter the show at any episode.
Right.
And coming into season two, I think we completely reverse course. There was season two, like season one, I think you could pick up an episode and be okay. But season two, we have that big narrative engine. And I think that was one of the great things about doing Sequential this season, was it primed people to be like, oh, no, I need to be listening to these episodes in order.
Exactly. And you know, the big issue I had with writing Sequential was the story itself. You know, the actual story of Serial is the murder of a young woman by, or allegedly by Anand Syed.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether he did it or not, and it's such a great engine, and she's tried to replicate it with season two and three, and I listened to a little bit of two, and I just put it down because it wasn't as compelling. So when it came to writing our own version of it, it was like, who's the character who died? And it was the kid. It was the sidekick to Goatman, which is our Batman. And it was something that I was resisting doing because that's really close to an influence on it, which is the death of Jason Todd.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I feel like what's great about Sequential is you managed to really take these two source materials, both the death of Jason Todd from the Batman universe and this real world show in Serial, and find these fusion points. So, like, when you were working from these two things, what were the things that inspired you? What did you say, like, okay, I needed to grab this bit? Or was it more abstract? What was it, more like moods and vibes?
You know, it started abstract because I was really worried about doing a Jason Todd parody, because it's something that's so ridiculed in the comics world. It's something that's been done a million times. Obviously, he's come back as Red Hood. Like, it's one of these moments that just gets repeated over and over and over, and it felt wrong to do that. So for a while, I was trying to come up with a different story, but it eventually just, like, all right, just screw it, we're doing this one. And what really brought it alive is because, you know, it's inherently a parody of not only Batman, but it became a parody of Succession, because I'm a huge Succession fan. And the second episode became a parody of that. And the third episode became a parody of Better Call Saul. And, you know, the fourth episode, you know, kind of wrote itself at that point. And,
well, I think it's kind of interesting, too, that like the way that they changed as we went further into the writing process, too, because I think they started as more direct parodies and then just sort of like,
yeah, and they became their own thing.
Right.
But what really kind of unlocked the entire series, and I can't remember the time I called you with, like, oh, I know how I'm going to do Sequential, was when I figured out that, oh, well, what if Sarah Koenig was actually Harley Quinn, and the entire story was her falling in love with a villain and then becoming his sidekick, which, you know, that felt right.
Yeah.
And it feels weird that I beat DC to that. Like, it feels like in 2 years there'll be the Harley Quinn audio drama, and it'll be pretty much what we wrote.
One of the challenges is you want to make it accessible to people who aren't up on their comics lore. Like, someone who's never read a Batman comic should be able to engage with Sequential. And I think they can. But for the people who have, I can't count the number of people who have started listening to Sequential. It's gone like 2.5-3 episodes in, and have just been like, you know, Candace Stripe is being a little irresponsible here.
Yeah.
And I remember a conversation I had with my wife when she's going through this, where it's just like, hey, do you get the reference? And she's like, yeah, it's, you know, Sicko's the Joker. You know, this is Jason Todd. And then I was just like, hey, babe, who's Candace? And just 5 seconds of silence, followed by her eyes widening. And she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been the experience of a bunch of people who've listened, which I think means that, like, we hit it.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if people are listening to to this part, then yeah, they enjoyed it. Whatever. You nailed it. Yeah. And I think that element is just like such a, like, giving, making Candace Stripe such a palpable character, like someone who changes and like is changed by this experience, is so cool. Now, is that something that because I feel like that's also a little serial, no?
It is, you know, Serial, having listened to Serial again to write the series, and then, you know, just listening to it for fun, let's kick this around. One of the things that's so striking about it is that she takes, was it like 12, 22 episodes to be like, well, I don't know if this kid did it or not, even though it felt inevitable that Candace becomes our Harlequin, because nothing changes if we solve the murder, right? Mm-hmm. Like the murder gets solved. Hooray. You know, that's it. Or it doesn't get solved and there's no status quo, to actually instead to have it be the entire thing be the origin story of a villain felt way more powerful. And especially for those listeners who weren't aware of what was happening, and then in that last episode realizing, oh my God, she's Harley Quinn, you know, to pull that mask off at that last moment, you know, made the entire thing that much more satisfying.
Yeah. And I think that ending was definitely something that we went back and forth, like the exact way that ending transpired. Cause I think you knew where it was going when you started writing it, but I think getting the tone of it was definitely one of those things that like needing to get that right.
Well, that was a suggestion that you had. The last moment of the show was going to be her just like letting him go. And then you had suggested that she, like, full mask off, like winds up blowing him up out of there.
I think that's why I've been bringing in the explosives.
Whoa! It's door number three!
I feel like when we write this series, like, I come up with these broad strokes of like, okay, this moment happens and this moment happens and this is why this character is X. But you always have the, well, but they should be swinging a flaming sword while they do it. And it's just like, well, yeah, no, that's totally right. And winds up making those moments that much stronger.
Was there anything you were surprised by as you were writing it that you didn't expect to end up in the script?
You know, I also write screenplays and things like that. And I tend to plan those out, you know, with treatments and beat sheets and truly like get the clock running on that story down to a T, so that I can write it and not be and be surprised as I go through it. But with SPR, because it's so much shorter, I tend to write those, you know, like just as is. It's just, okay, here's this vague idea. So a lot of the bigger character moments of like, oh, well, let's make this character I mentioned in episode 2, the elder kid was a parody of Kendall Roy from Succession. And that was an accident. It was like, oh, like, who is this guy? And thinking, well, he's an older child. He wants the, oh my God, it can be a parody of this character. And, you know, Succession was huge at the time. And hopefully people felt that. But that was pleasant. And usually the characters that come up, though, those are surprises of just, you know, of who they are, I suppose.
And lastly, while we're still on the writing section, this question comes to us from our vibrant Discord community. If you want to join in and ask us questions, we're around. You can find the link in the show notes. This question comes from one of our super fans, Wacko, and they wanted to know about what inspired Whiteout.
Oh, well, Whiteout is a pretty direct reference to the vacuum cleaner salesman and the end of Breaking Bad, but it was also to have a character that everybody could, that could only interact with once. And it was one of those ideas of just, oh, well, what if you literally can only talk to this guy one time?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's probably the element that inspired the question. Like, so like, where did that come from? 'Cause that is a very unique sort of ability.
Well, it's, you know, it's, I feel like this is a very X-Men writer question of like, we need a mutant that can do X, and we need to build this character around this one ability, and gosh darn it, we're going to do it. And that's kind of how that character came to be. And obviously, you know, doing a parody of the Breaking Bad character, but then also just like, okay, who would this guy be in real life?
Yeah.
And
well, and I think it ended up being really fun, like plot wise, too. Like, you know, it's a good gag, but it also steepens the mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the supporting characters I tend to write, they're not all parodies, but it's their function drives them first of, okay, I need somebody to push this person into a room, or, you know, parent of student who is affected by something. And you start with this like very vague idea, but you don't want to leave it there. You want to make these people real. And, you know, it felt like a nice piece, you know, even though they're morally gray, it felt like a nice piece of color to add into the season.
That's clever. I like that. And if you have other questions to ask us for the next time we do these again, Discord in the show notes. Boom.
Yeah, so we're going to head to the directing side of the season, which Max is going to handle, because he handled all of that. And the thing I'd like to ask Max about was the casting, because obviously, you know, you can direct all you like, but you can't do it without voice actors. So where did we start?
Yeah.
Especially on your side.
Well, so I think that there was a couple of characters that were locks right away. I think once I had met Rachel Music, who ended up being the voice of Candace Stripe, after a couple of conversations with her, I was just hearing in my head, I was just like, yeah, this is someone who can carry the show because of the arc we had established. I didn't want to burn Ellen Spiegel or Haley Frontman.
We talked about... Yeah. If they would be in charge of the show, and then it just very quickly just became, we got to write somebody new.
Yeah. Well, you know, just because like we want to see the full arc from them, and also because Rachel is so good.
Yeah.
Like she is extraordinary, and we wanted to get our money's worth out of her, and giving her that arc just felt right.
Spandex sub-brand, Spandex presents Over Armor, a dynamic, fully symbiotic costume that lives next to your skin.
Another new arrival that we had this season, Frank, I don't think I would have necessarily thought of him as Goatman, but just as we were doing our table reads and casting up, like, you know, he just had this like very like Batman the Animated Series.
This is Frank Romero.
Romero, yeah.
Yeah, just amazing actor who does First Order stuff on the West Coast Disneyland.
Yeah, he's also in the Barbershop Quartet.
Yeah, just
he's such a our recording sessions went like 4 hours over just because he also has my brand of ADHD. But man, like you listen to that scene in episode 2 of Sequential, which is in the season in episode 3, where it's just him and Candace going back and forth, and that scene, whew, it gives me shivers.
You want to say something to me?
All of your sidekicks,
children,
died just as they were rumored to take over as Goatman.
Are you accusing me of murder, young lady?
But I feel like that was easy. I feel like Candace was easy. And the other big part was Sicko.
Yeah.
For me. And that was the one I think I was most excited about going into it, because Evan Maltby was someone that we found after we had already recorded most of season one. And I can't remember, like, he sent his tape late or he just connected with us late. And we only had a few bit parts for him. But he had, like, these great, like, villain voices. We had him in as Gold Croc and a couple of other just, like, very just, like,
Bisbee, Croc Command has come to save you!
And he's a really versatile guy. Like, he has this very deep, pleasant voice, but it has all this range. And, you know, and I knew we wanted him in for Sicko, but it's tough because how do you make Sicko not the Joker?
Well, yeah, how do you parody a character that's inherently a parody of another character?
Well, and also so iconically, right? You know, I feel like Goatman could be like full Batman voice, but like if you're doing Mark Hamill's Joker, or I mean really anyone's joke, like you know, it's funny, you say like Mark Hamill's Joker, Jack Nicholson's Joker, Heath Ledger's Joker, like these are like fixed into the American cultural patchwork. They are all iconic. And when we started going through these lines, it was just like, we wanted to remind people of the Joker without being the Joker. And I think we spent probably like 2 hours with him just doing different funny voices for me. And we ended up with something that kind of reminded me of the Mucinex germs. I'm not sure if you've seen those ads where it's just like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I was gonna. Like CGI. I was gonna ask, because I know when we were working on the series, mm-hmm. when did we decide that Sicko was gonna be physically sick the entire time?
Oh, geez,
because that was something that helped with the characterization of him, because mm-hmm. you don't want him to be like, you know, the opposite of the Joker. You don't want him to be sad, because then that's just pathetic. And, you know, you don't want him just to laugh like the Joker, because then that's the Joker. And then I remember the note came, right. I believe it came from you, of the idea, yeah. Oh, he should be ill. And it's like, oh, great. Yeah. Perfect.
Well, I think that comes from the idea of that I don't like full parodies of characters, because that I feel like that's very limiting. I feel like if someone is a one-to-one, you can only move so far. You can only move through the bounds of what's already been established. So you have to find ways of like making it. It's like, this is a character that will remind you of the Joker, but we can do whatever we want because he's his whole character. And yeah, I think making him sick was just like, we need to give him a thing. And that from that starting point, he was able to, I guess we could talk more about his arc when we get into it. But yeah, just like, it was a great cast all the way through. Alex Stein too, because I know we talked about this earlier. You wanted the original kid to feel like the secession.
Yeah.
Storyline. And Alex Stein has always been just like this. I love him to death. And he plays a dirtbag so well. Just like he has just a great punch this guy in the face kind of energy that he can bring to characters. And I think he actually like absolutely delivered in that part. I think he found a really good balance between, like, he ends up being kind of likable too.
Yeah. So you mentioned the character arcs mm-hmm. before, and this is something I want to get into it with you. Candace's arc over the series, right? She starts as intrepid reporter, ends as a supervillain, and something I had been concerned about in the writing of the series was, how are we going to show this? Like, where, like, there's small hints in the writing that are like, oh, this person's going to go rogue or has the opportunity to go rogue. But when it comes to directing it, of, okay, here's the scripted parts. Here are the parts that are not scripted. How do I push this? How did you plot her ascent to villainy?
Yeah. And you know, that was a big struggle when we were making it from day one, is how do we make this arc feel natural? Because we didn't want, like, all of a sudden it's episode 4 and then she's like, no, I'm evil!
I know Sicko is a supervillain, but I can't deny he's right.
And, like, we wanted to plant the seed of it going on. I think we first just went through the whole season and just sort of, like, felt out, like, you know, where are you here? Where are you here? I think for me, the reason she is converted is because she lets the desire to tell an engaging story overwhelm her journalistic nature. And I think that the moments that Candy Striper seeps through is tied to those moments of, holy shit, this is good content. Like when she's like, you know, like, oh, he's alive. Ho ho, this is it. There's no body. Ha 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 ha. And you watch this like quiet corruption, because like this whole situation is great radio. Yeah. And I think her knowing that is the seed of the Candy Striper as it's going. I think that's a really significant part of her arc. And I think when we found those moments, that's where we let like just a little bit of the voice change. And if you listen back to it too, like if you play just the intros one after another, you'll hear her just like every episode get a little bit further along that path. And actually inversely, the note that I gave to Evan when we're doing Sicko is every time from the first episode, it's like, you know, this is a prepaid call from Sicko. Every time it gets a little bit more mild, and the way they talks like goes from this like raving lunatic to a very concerned citizen.
Sicko! 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 Sicko!
Honestly, maybe this guy isn't so bad. And just playing those two competing movements against each other, so we're really going into Candace's perspective almost, and how she's seeing Sicko and how that relationship is developing. And I think that was so much fun. And also, like, the seed of it, too, you see it in Serial. Like, you do see this bonding of, like, yeah, maybe he is a good guy. You want him to be. Like, you spend a lot of time with someone in a true crime podcast. You want him to be innocent. Like, you're having all these conversations. You don't want them to be a murderer.
Except for they, like, totally found out that dude was a murderer. And then they're like, ah, he's so nice. We can't say. Either way, it's just like, come
no, but exactly,
on.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, you've just bonded, and so you don't want that for them. And so you forget what your job is. Your job is to find the truth.
Yeah.
Or so, you could blow up the prison and break him out.
You could totally do that. So that wraps up my question list. Is there anything we want to leave the listener with before we get on out of here?
Well, I think, thanks for sticking around if you've made it this far. Also, again, consider joining our Discord. The next one of these we're going to do is To Catch a Speedster. So if you have any questions around that, the making of, we're going to stitch those guys together. We're also probably going to do this for Utility Belts and These American Supers and just all the little niche things to do, like little best ofs for you. And so, you know, anything you want to see, let us know.
Yeah, we're going to be a little bit better about content in the off season. Obviously the show's pretty big to make, and you know, a little bit behind the scenes, we're both freelance workers, and it's been an interesting year for freelance work. So when this is not on, we're not only thinking about the show, but also just trying to keep food on the table for our families. So, bear that in mind as you are wait eagerly for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for sticking with us. You guys make this worthwhile.
That's true.
Oh, wait, sorry. One last thing I forgot to add. Hopefully you caught it this time, but my favorite gag that I don't know anyone noticed was the previously on Sequential in episode 4. I had a different actor do the whiteout lines.
I did notice that because they would have had an actor fill in for that spot. Right?
Well, no, it's no, but no, the gag for me is it's because it makes you question, wait, was that what Whiteout sounded like?
All right.
It's like it's because it's not even exactly the right line. It's just like, you know, like as you were saying, it's just like, well, I don't know. I would have called Shiko innocent, which is like, that's not exactly what he said, but like, it's close enough that your brain is like, yeah, that's, I remember that. It's definitely a 1% joke, but hopefully you found it hilarious.
All right, Super Squad. We'll catch you next time on the next SPR collection thing.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Night has fallen. The moon is full. And we're inviting you to listen to Canada by Night, a podcast where professional improvisers play Vampire the Masquerade. Detective-turned-vampire Everett Fry accidentally becomes the sheriff of New Haven, an experimental town where they're testing if vampires and humans can coexist. Stuck leading a ragtag group of officers, the Bruja bounty hunter Val, the Gangrel news reporter Evangeline, and the Tremere blood witch Doris, can Everett keep the town running? Or will everyone end up liquidated by the Vampire Council of Canada? Trending on global fiction charts and produced by Dum Dums and Dice, whose podcast Dum Dums and Dragons ranked number 2 of all fiction podcasts in America, listen now to find out why Canada by Night has been downloaded more than 500,000 times. Canada by Night, its interview with the vampire, if it had all the characters from Parks and Rec in it.